From Sapporo, Japan, this is the Debito.org newsletter for November 12, 2007. I'm Arudo Debito from Sapporo, Japan. Welcome. In today's news, we're going to be talking, yes, about more fingerprinting. We have some new articles for you. We're talking about some improvements that have been made due to protests. We also have some assembly and protesting at the Justice Ministry on November 20th at noon. We also have an article from the Japan Times on the U.S. government forcing Prime Minister Abe to back down regarding the comfort women. The LA Times on how Japanese police ignore certain crimes such as murder. The IHT Asahi Metropolis National Union of General Workers on the Eikaiwa Nova bankruptcy aftermath. The November 17th Federation of Bar Associations, or Nichiben Ren, having a meeting regarding divorce and joint custody. And an upcoming speech in Tokyo, November 18th, at the No Border Group annual meeting. I'll be speaking there. Come along and listen if you like. Well, this wouldn't be Debito.org if we didn't talk a little bit about fingerprinting again, because the issue just keeps on mutating. It's the many-headed hydra that just won't die. But in fact, protest is working, believe it or not. Narita Airport has instituted new separate lines for residents. I'm reading from a scanned pamphlet from somebody who passed through immigration last week. It goes like this, quote, "Important information from the Immigration Bureau. We will change the booth for your immigration inspection, as shown below. Booth 1 will handle Japanese passports, special permanent residents. Booth 2, re-entry permit holders. And booth 3, foreign passports. Those who have a re-entry permit, except for special permanent residents, please make a queue at the dedicated lane for a re-entry permit holder. Tokyo Regional Immigration Bureau, Narita Airport Branch. Original up at my blog. Comment. You see, protest does have an effect. Residents, i.e. those who have paid their Gaijin homecoming tax by getting a re-entry permit, are now no longer lumped in together with tourists. But it still hasn't resolved the problem of how this is going to impede business people, especially APEC business travel card holders, not to mention the issues of treating every non-Japanese as a potential Typhoid Mary or Osama Jr. And it's still done to you every time. Or the fact that the letter of the law is still not being followed nationwide. As Steve Koya poignantly commented at Debito.org, quote, "We have a loophole, or at least a stay of execution. All we need is a decent lawyer, and we can stop this legislation. It's a simple argument about the automatic gates." A chat with Sapporo Immigration confirmed that there were no plans to have the gates at Chitose or any other airport other than Narita, giving lack of time and money as a reason. Well, despite the fact that they may have no time or insufficient funds, unfortunately, immigration are required by the new law to make the automated gates available to non-Japanese residents at all airports within 18 months from the promulgation of the legislation, 24th of May 2006. There is no only Narita clause. There is no post-promulgation amendment. If they're not able to apply the law, then it should be rescinded. You could also state that failure to apply the law in full would also make it non-binding, so refusing to give your fingerprints would not theoretically, be illegal. All we need is a decent lawyer. Amnesty, show us your muscle. Comment. Extra booth or not, I still say you should not be separated from your Japanese families. Stand together in the same line, everyone. Meanwhile, the issue just keeps on mutating in the press. An article in the LA Times yesterday said everything we've been saying so far, and this time for a big U.S. Pacific Coast audience with close ties to Japan. The article even includes Justice Minister Hatoyama sexing up his arguments with his alleged terrorist friends. Quoting the article, "Japan's welcome mat getting prickly. New rules requiring fingerprints and digital photos of visitors are revealing about attitudes towards foreigners," critics say. This is the Los Angeles Times, November 11, 2007. This is by Bruce Wallace. Japan's justice minister even offered a bizarre personal anecdote to explain how easy it was for non-Japanese to sneak into the country. "A friend of my friend is a member of Al-Qaeda," Kunio Hatoyama told foreign reporters in Tokyo, saying that the man had entered Japan numerous times using fake passports and disguises. Hatoyama later backtracked slightly on his story, distancing himself from any connection to Al-Qaeda and raising suspicions that he had embellished his anecdote to press the case for fingerprinting foreigners. Rest is up at my blog. Terry's take this morning went even further. This is from their general edition, Sunday, November 11, 2007, issue 445. Quote, "We'll say up front that the proposed measures have been an unmitigated public relations disaster for the Japanese government, and the Justice Ministry in particular. Although the basic idea was to cooperate with the USA and other nations to try and catch potential terrorists at the borders, The measures have in fact proven to be disjointed, unorganized, and ultimately unworkable. They have also managed to infuriate pretty much every long-term tax-paying foreign resident in Japan. More at my blog. Other articles highlighted other issues in passing, not only about the unwieldiness of this policy, but also its ineffectiveness. Article begins, "Will entry checks cross the line? Fingerprinting foreigners won't stop tourists, critics say." This is by Jun Hongo, The Japan Times, Thursday, November 8, 2007. Excerpt, "Experts doubt whether the fingerprint policy will even stop potential terrorists from entering the country. Under the procedure, visitors whose biometric data match those on confidential tourist watch lists will be denied entry to Japan. The lists are believed to include, one, compiled by the U.S. government, and contain the names of about 750,000 terror suspects. Justice Minister Kunio Hatoyama has said Japan will cooperate with U.S. authorities in exchanging immigration data." But Barry Steinhardt, director of the American Civil Liberties Union's program on technology and liberty, said the U.S. watch list is, quote, "bloated and full of inaccuracy." Continuing the quote, "The U.S. immigration policy is a total failure," Steinhardt warned, expressing concern that Japan's version of biometric verification will likely be built on a flawed foundation. Quote, "It's full of mistakes. That's the reality in the U.S., and it's likely to become reality in Japan. Whether or not the loss of liberty is worth the security gained is not a question, because no security is gained." Naoto Nikai, an Immigration Bureau official, wouldn't answer whether foreign mothers traveling with Japanese infants would be separated at immigration gates. "The immigration officer at the airport will make the judgment," Nikai said. More at my blog. Here's another article entitled, "Arriving Outside Narita Will Be Worse." This is by Eric Johnston. This is in the Japan Times, November 8, 2007, Osaka. "As annoying as the new fingerprint procedure will be for non-Japanese going through immigration at Narita International Airport, it's going to be much more for foreign residents who don't live in the Tokyo area. Unlike at Narita International Airport, those passing through regional airports will have to go through the fingerprint registration process every time they re-enter Japan. This is because only Narita, which handled half of all non-Japanese coming into the country in 2006, will introduce a new automated system that officials hope will speed up the new rules regarding most foreigners to have their fingerprints and photographs taken upon entry. To date, airports have usually allowed foreigners with alien registration cards and re-entry permits to pass through immigration counters reserved for Japanese nationals. At the moment, it remains unclear if fingerprinting and photographing machines will be set up at immigration counters reserved for Japanese citizens. During the initial period after November 20th, it could be the case that foreign residents will have to stay in the lines for foreign visitors only. That policy may change after November 20th, but it depends on the airport," said Takumi Sato, an Immigration Bureau official in Tokyo. According to the Immigration Bureau, about 8.1 million foreigners passed through the immigration centers at 10 airports and 8 ports in 2006. About 50% arrived via Narita, while another third entered via Kansai, Chubu, New Chitose, and Fukuoka airports. The remainder arrived at Haneda and smaller international terminals at airports in Sendai, Naha, Okinawa Prefecture, Hiroshima, and Hakodate, while a little more than 187,000 people, or 1.1% of the total, arrived by ship. More up at my blog. And on Tuesday, noon, November 20th, assemble in protest at the Justice Ministry. This is excerpting from the public appeal from Amnesty International Japan and Solidarity for Migrants Japan. This is translated by yours truly. Excerpt. "Japan's version of the U.S. visit program is so laden with problems and passed without adequate deliberation by the Diet that we call for the government and the Justice Ministry to immediately suspend it. To this end, we will assemble before the Justice Ministry on the day of its promulgation, November 20th, 2007, for a public action and protest. We call on the public to join us at noon that day and lend your support and participation. That will be Tuesday, November 20th, 2007, at noon. It'll take about 30 minutes to an hour. It'll be at the Ministry of Justice, Kasumigaseki, Tokyo, Godo Choisha No. 6. Take the subway Marunouchi line to Kasumigaseki Station, get out at the Bengoshi Kaikan exit. We'll have a soundtrack with speeches, placards, message boards saying, 'No to fingerprinting. Fingerprinting non-Japanese is discrimination. Non-Japanese does not mean terrorist,' etc. Create your own slogan and sign and bring it. Contact Amnesty International Japan, 03-3518-6777. You can also go to my blog and see links to their websites at dbt.org. Comment. Now's your chance, people. You don't like what's happening? Do something. You won't be alone. All right. Well, life is not all fingerprinting. Let's move on to some great news coverage of issues Davey.org has long been concerned about. Here's another one. Last March, blogs like mine followed how former Prime Minister Abe tried to deny there was any coercion involved in the World War II quote-unquote comfort women, i.e. sex slaves, servicing the Japanese Imperial Army in its colonies and war zones. You can trace the arc of Abe from denial to hair-splitting to no comment to deflection to apology through his cabinet through my website. Well, apologies tend to mean less when they come after being demanded, especially over a long wait. But when they came, well, I began to wonder whether there was any coercion on Abe. How much pressure was put on him, and from where? Well, Japan Times Kyoto News recently answered that question. The article's titled, U.S. Got Abe to Drop Denial Over Sex Slaves. This is from Kyoto News from the Japan Times, Friday, November 9, 2007. Excerpt. The United States warned Japan in March that Washington could no longer back Tokyo on the issue of North Korea's past abductions of Japanese unless then Prime Minister Shinzo Abe reversed his contentious claim that there was no proof that the Imperial forces forced women and girls into sexual slavery during the war. That warning, delivered by U.S. Ambassador Thomas Schieffer to a senior government official, prompted Abe to change his stance and announce that he stands by Japan's 1993 official statement of apology to the comfort women, as they are euphemistically known. More on my blog. Comment. What? When I read this, I thought this article had popped in from another dimension. This U.S. administration, which created Guantanamo concentration camp and actively resorts to kidnap and third-party torturing, renditioning, actually caring about human rights, putting pressure on Abe to change his stance regarding the sex slaves issue? Pinch me. But let's get into even weirder territory. The LA Times on how Japanese police ignore certain crimes, like murder. In a remarkable double build this week from Bruce Wallace, reporter from the LA Times, we have another article tying a heck of a lot of things together and left me with a tremor down my spine. The article is entitled, Japan's Police See No Evil. The boy had been badly beaten, but his death was ruled natural. The case was closed in an official culture that discourages autopsies. This is from the Los Angeles Times, November 9, 2007. Excerpt. As is common in Japan, Aichi police reached the verdict on how brutalized sumo wrestler Toki Taizan died without an autopsy. No need for a coroner, they said. No crime involved. Only 6.3% of the unnatural deaths in Aichi are investigated by a medical examiner. A minuscule rate, even by nationwide standards in Japan, where an autopsy is performed in 11.2% of cases. But Saito's case has given credence to complaints by a group of frustrated doctors, former pathologists, and ex-cops who argue that Japan's police culture is the main obstacle. Police discourage autopsies that might reveal a higher homicide rate in their jurisdiction, and pressure doctors to attribute unnatural deaths to health reasons, usually heart failure. People are getting away with murder in Japan, a country that officially claims one of the lowest per capita homicide rates in the world. Quote from an expert by the name of Saikawa. All the police care about is how they look to people. It's all PR to show that their capabilities are high. Without autopsies, they can keep their percentage of solved cases high. It's all about numbers. Many police examinations of the body are cursory, he alleges, sometimes nothing more sophisticated than a visual examination. Take the case in January 2006 when financial advisor Hideaki Noguchi was found dead in an Okinawa hotel with knife wounds. Noguchi was a close associate of Takafumi Horie, the brash founder of the internet company LiveDoor. But despite being a central figure in a sensational criminal investigation and privy to LiveDoor secrets, police declared Noguchi's death a suicide. They did not ask for an autopsy, and the body was cremated. Or take the suicide in April of Agricultural Minister Toshikatsu Matsuoka, who was found hanged in his Tokyo apartment. Matsuoka was embroiled in a scandal involving the misappropriation of political funds that suggested a broad system of organized influence peddling. Even though Matsuoka's troubles were destabilizing the government, and his death occurred just hours before his scheduled appearance to answer questions before a parliamentary committee, no autopsy was conducted to ensure that he had not died from something other than hanging. A day later, Shinichi Yamazaki, a businessman implicated in the same scandal, plunged to his death in a parking lot outside his Yokohama apartment. No autopsy was conducted in that case either. Rest at my blog. Comment. Chilling. And I took a deep breath and said to myself, what if somebody wanted to shut up Davido.org? It worked for whistleblowing film director Itami Juzo. Moving on. Let's talk a bit more about the Nova bankruptcy aftermath. There are two good articles recently, one from the IHT Asahi, the other from Metropolis Magazine. Let's take a look at the Asahi one first. Asahi Weekly, cover story, Nova Fallout, November 8, 2007, and I excerpt. G Communication Group, a consulting firm based in Nagoya, will reopen at least 30 Nova schools and says it hopes to rehire the Nova staff. As for Nova's former president, Nozomu Satorhashi, he looks set to face criminal charges shortly for failing to pay billions of yen in wages to his employees, sources said. Some Nova teachers are in such dire financial straits that they are having to rely on their former students to feed them. Here's another. The decline and fall of Nova, Japan's largest employer of foreigners, comes to an ignominious end. This is by Ken Worsley. It was in Metropolis Magazine, November 9, 2007. In a sense, Satorhashi has been playing into the hands of the bankruptcy administrations who seek to pin the blame for Nova's woes on him alone. His selfishness, petulance, disdain for employees and customers, and lack of business acumen making him an exceedingly worthy scapegoat. As this article was going to print, Satorhashi remained incommunicado, and the bankruptcy administrators seem to be hoping that the worse he looks, the more the firm will appear to be an innocent victim of his tyranny. Will the strategy of separating Satorhashi from the firm he wrecked succeed? Nova's bankruptcy administrators claim they have found a few firms interesting in taking over the company's operation. But this time they're not naming names. Nova supposedly has until the second week of November to find a sponsor, or else it will be forced to go into a bankruptcy liquidation process. The rest up at my blog, with some great links to where former Nova employees can get help. Now for the union's perspective. This is from Lewis Carlett of the National Union of General Workers, in part helping out Nova teachers. Quote, members, much happened yesterday regarding the Nova case. At 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., at locations throughout the country, Nova's trustee held information sessions explaining various aspects of the coming Nova bankruptcy and explaining G Education's offer to hire all Nova teachers who want to be hired at the same working conditions they had before. We also last night joined forces with General Union to tell the trustee, Noriaki Takahashi, that former conditions were not enough. Both unions, Nambu and General Union, submitted to him several demands, including full enrollment of all teachers in Shakai Hoken and open-ended employment. The trustee said he agreed with all the demands. There's more on my blog. Again, it pays to protest and get organized, so do so. Next up, November 17th, Nichibenren, the Federation of Bar Associations, are having a meeting on divorce and joint custody. Following up on the headlining topic last newsletter, on the Fortaka and Mana documentary film screening and fundraiser, taking place December 11, 2007, let's talk about the issue of joint custody, which, would you believe, is not allowed in Japan, meaning after a divorce, one parent is nearly always cut off from their children, myself included. This is gaining some traction with lawyers in Japan. I'm quoting Mark Smith from the Children's Rights Network Japan, who says, the Japan Federation of Bar Associations, or Nichibenren, will be having a seminar in Tokyo entitled Divorce and Children 2, Thinking of Joint Custody. This is not just for lawyers, so if you speak Japanese and are in Tokyo on November 17th, from 1300 hours to 1700 hours, you may want to attend. You know, it might be a good thing to have a lot of non-Japanese show up there so that they see the problem is not restricted to Japanese. End quote. Back to the Fortaka and Mana documentary film fundraiser. Well, please do support this event. Spread the word, attend, contribute, and there's even a movie poster newly put up at david.org. Go and see my blog November 12th. And finally, there's a speech coming up in Tokyo this weekend, November 18th, Sunday, at the No Border Group annual meeting. Let me read to you from the brochure. No Border 2007. Living Together in One Society, Roundtable Discussion, hosted by the Volunteer Network of Foreign Residents in Japan. Objective. Following last year's event, a roundtable discussion session will be held with the aim to assist individuals in their efforts at networking. This event aims to create an opportunity for individuals to consider the experiences of foreign residents and Japanese nationals with various cultural backgrounds in Japan. This will be taking place on Sunday, November 18th, 2007, from 10 o'clock to 17 o'clock. At Hosei University, Ichigaya Campus. You can see a map on my blog. Entrance is free. Participants are free to enter and leave the event venue as they wish. Active participation is welcome and encouraged during the roundtable discussion session. Part 1 will be from 10 o'clock to 12:30. Is there a place for Japanese of foreign descent in Japanese society? Discussing the multiplicity of what it means to be Japanese. We'll also be defining the issue and presenting the movie The New Foreign Residents of Japan. Part 2 will be from 1400 to 1630, What is Necessary for a System to Support a New Lifestyle? Presentation 1 will be from Kim Kyung-ju of Chukyo University. Presentation 2 will be from Inoue Hiroshi from Keidanren, or the Japan Business Federation. Presentation 3 will be from Arudo Debito. More information at www.zainichi.net. No spaces. And that's all for today. Thank you very much for listening, as always. And by tradition, we're going to play you another Duran Duran song. This is from their most recent album. Actually, it won't be the most recent album soon, because another one's coming out next week. It's called Reach Up for the Sunrise. It's a single, 2004. Single, Reach Up for the Sunrise. I hope you enjoyed it. This is davidhill.org, speaking to you from Sapporo, Japan. Thanks very much, as always, to transpacificradio.com for hosting my show. I'll talk to you again next week. Thank you very much, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.